What's going on, y'all? Welcome to a special episode of Eagle and a Pirate. This is Edgar.
And Corday Snell.
We are your co-hosts, and today we will be discussing episodes 1 through 8 of the documentary. Some people call it the MJ doc, but it's the Bulls doc, The Last Dance. So we know it's been a global phenomenon. Absolutely. I think ESPN even dropped it a little early for us, right?
Ain't nothing on,
but
might as well put it out.
During this quarantine time, stay at home order, I know that every Sunday, me, my dad, and some other members of the family all get together and then watch the TV show. Man, and there's been a ton of things that we've been discussing in some of our group chats, in some of the forums, and some of the Facebook groups we're a part of, right? Mm-hmm. And we just got to get it out there. So we're going to do just an overview of different topics that have popped up during the show, different situations, and just analyze it and just talk about it. And then after this episode, we are going to do a final episode covering the last two. Mm-hmm. So Corday, start it off, my brother.
We started off, we could talk about just the breakup of it. They started it's a constant doc just going back and forth to like leading up to where the 1998 season, where they say no matter what, this will be Phil Jackson's final year coaching for the Bulls, which was crazy at the time because they had already three pretty earlier in the 90s and they had just won back-to-back championships. But it showed, the documentary talks about how much of an asshole the GM was. Jerry Krause. And how much of ego trip the guy had because he wasn't getting credit. He was bad for business. He was great for business when it comes to he brought in a lot of players. He brought in Scottie Pippen. He traded Charles Oakley and brought in Bill Cartwright and just a bunch of guys to just build the roster up around
Dennis Rodman.
Acquired Dennis Rodman and built the roster up around Michael Jordan and
did something that let's not forget LeBron's GMs couldn't do
exactly
his time, right?
Yeah, and the crazy thing about it was the only thing he didn't do was draft Michael Jordan. And he always felt slighted and was upset that he never got the credit. So, crazy to me, they said, this will be Phil Jackson's last season. And I remember Phil Jackson even saying that Jerry Krause said, I don't care if you win 82 games, this will be your last season as head coach of the Bulls, which is just mind-blowing at that. So, they win another championship, three-peat, and then Michael Jordan retires. Phil Jackson leaves, and then the Bulls' reign is over.
So pretty much every season, Phil Jackson always likes to name the season. Yeah. So this season, he named it The Last Dance. Who would have known it would have been marketable 20 odd years later, right?
Exactly, yeah.
It would be the name of the show, but I think that it was very catchy.
Mm-hmm.
He is a very intelligent man, very in-tuned man.
Absolutely.
So I feel like it was just a great way to summarize that because I feel like there was underlying tones that gets into the TV show of what all these people were feeling and that it was going to be the last time for all of them to be together.
Yeah, and the funny thing about it was Jerry Krause started off in actually baseball. He was a baseball general manager, and then he had developed a relationship with the owner who the owner brought over and made him and hired him to GM, even though a lot of people told him not to because the guy just can't read the room and he's not great at building relationships with people, which is, as a GM, you definitely have to do. You have to manage egos, which Phil Jackson is ridiculously good at. But then also you have to be able, the environment has to be good, you know, has to be great. You can't be the guy who everybody hates, and especially breaking up the team because you felt like you're not getting enough credit because of it, which was still crazy when you think about it. Two three-peats under your watch, but because you didn't get enough credit and because you didn't draft Michael Jordan, you had to break up this team.
Now I feel like there are some people that are pretty hardline, some coaches, some GMs, but I think that this was just to show that, hey, ultimately, I have the power, and I will be here long after all of you leave. Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So that was his ultimate, I am the man. Mm-hmm. I got the power. I'm here because of all of you.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, he was the coach that hired Phil Jackson.
GM.
He did. He was the GM that hired Phil Jackson.
Yeah.
He replaced the coach that had winning records with the Bulls.
Yeah.
With someone. That's a bold move, yeah. right? When you're making a statement that you're going for one of your guys.
Yeah.
Now, understandably, you don't see a lot of those cross GMs going from one sport to another.
Yeah.
I understand that he did have good management skills. Oh. But, like I say, he got an ego, and he was an asshole, right?
And he had that little man's syndrome yeah. complex, stuff like that, because he was only like 5'3", 5'4", fat, chubby. And it's crazy how the doc like just like looks at him, how they zoom in on his face, and you just see like his double chin, and he just like how the where he looked, and just really showed like that little man complex was very real. And especially when they just called him fat and ugly and all this kind of stuff, and was probably never an athlete. So the doc definitely
it looked like he never played sports.
Never played sports. Never could play sports. So it definitely focused on that and just built up that little man's complex, which seemed and probably was very true as well. That plays out through the doc, even so much it carried over into certain people's relationships and certain people's contracts when it came to players like Scottie Pippen and even Michael Jordan.
Yeah, you know, there was a big, I guess, night and day sort of thing with Jordan's contract mm-hmm. and then come to be Scottie Pippen's contract.
Yeah.
Now, Scottie's contract, he had a 7-year, $18 million deal.
Yeah.
Now, I get your mindset is that Scottie seems very wise, mm-hmm. very intelligent mm-hmm. in order to be like, I'm going to secure the bag on yeah. this guaranteed contract yeah. in order to provide for my family. Mm-hmm. So that is the best thing that he did, right? Was it the best contract in terms of sports?
Yeah.
No. Was it the best contract in terms of security for your family? Mm-hmm. In his mind, he did.
Yeah.
Now, it could also be the fault of his sports agent.
Yeah.
But they didn't secure the best contract on the market, yeah. right?
Well,
they said at some point,
yeah.
it, you know, that final season, the 97-98 season, yeah. he was like the 100-something 25th. Highest played player in the NBA.
They were, I think everybody on the team besides Jordan made more money than him, I think. For the majority, I think there was like 7 players who was making more than Scottie Pippen, who was an all-star, future Hall of Famer. And like as you mentioned, secure the bag or secure the longevity that he wanted, because he's like from a small area in like Arkansas, had like I think like 12, I think he's like one of like 11 or 12 children. So the longevity of the deal is what he wanted, the security of it.
Yeah.
But even the owner says that he's like, you guys will both be underpaid during this deal. And the reason why he was so drastically underpaid, because at the time when they signed it, I believe it was the 89 or 90 season when they signed it, the TV deals and the amount of money start coming in 91 and 92. So they was underpaid probably 2 years later of this deal, and kept being drastically underpaid. And there's even talk back then, Michael Jordan made so much more off the court than he did on, because the money and the TV revenue had kicked in and they weren't playing players like that. But eventually, Jordan was able to recoup a bunch of money. I think his last 3 years, I think he was in the $30 million range, which in the 90s was ridiculous. Because nowadays we have players making that much, but in 90s and stuff like that, only person who was making that much money was Jordan. Like
22 odd years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just to point out to that, I mean, one interesting facet was the fact that Scottie couldn't get the upper hand on this, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the only leverage that he found wasn't until his last year of his deal, where he sat out.
Mm.
And it wasn't just a sit out, but he was injured.
Yeah.
And he decided to have his surgery during the season yeah. instead of, you know, before the season.
Yeah.
And there was some turmoil between Jordan
yeah.
and his other teammate, Steve Kerr, on yeah. whether or not it was the correct decision
yeah.
for him. You yeah. know, Jordan's all about winning. He's yeah. all about, you know, trying to chase that next trophy.
Mm-hmm.
In his mindset, he was like, yo, that was not the right time. But Steve Kerr, being a more empathetic person, yeah. it seems like, was just like, no, he had to do what's best for him.
Yeah.
And that was the way that he was handling his contract situation.
Yeah, exactly. Because he said they at the time, they wasn't showing no respect, no love. And then Jordan, like, literally called him out. He said, that's not what he's being selfish, is what Jordan said about Scottie. Because Scottie said, I had this foot injury that I needed to get surgery on. And instead of getting surgery on in the off season, which was the summer, he was like, no, I'm going to enjoy my summer. I'm going to get surgery during training camp and in rehab throughout the season, which shows how much he didn't like Jerry Krause. And even so much at certain points and during that final season, Scotty was literally cussing him out while on the team bus while driving back to whatever facility or after the game, because Jordan didn't like him either. And then Scotty really went after him because he wouldn't give him a better contract, because the owner even said, this is going to be an out-of-date contract, but if you sign this deal, the owner and the GM both felt, well, if you sign this deal, I don't want to hear nothing else about this or that you're underpaid, because, like, once you sign a deal, fine, you're done. Like, or
there's no restructuring. We're not going back to the table to fix any terms, right? Mm-hmm. And that was the leverage that they had. They were like, man, this is what you wanted. You got what you wanted. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's always interesting because I always saw Scottie Pippen as being like the very calm, chill dude, mellow dude, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then figuring out that he was cussing out the general manager of the team in front of the entire team and the staff, right? Mm-hmm. It just shows
gave
you
no fucks.
Yeah, he just gave no fucks.
It reminds of your team when Antonio Brown was cussing at Mike Mayock and he called him a honky or whatever, and it shows like the different dynamics of then and now. You know, like he was later suspended or sent home and stuff like that, but can't do nothing to Scotty because everyone around, especially because, you know, Michael Jordan saying the same thing, and that's Scotty's guy, so you're not going to do nothing against Scotty.
Yeah.
Because Jordan basically, well, he didn't run everything, but you can't punish him because Jordan felt the same exact way.
Yeah. It's interesting because Jerry Krause always wanted to fight for his ego, always wanted to fight for his pride. But at the end of the day, it was very evident that not everyone in that building respected him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why he demanded so much respect, because people in his own building would diss him. Like, you think about Jordan. Jordan always made fat jokes, made short jokes about him. And it's like, who really carries that sort of relationship with someone who runs your team? That's pretty much like your boss, right? That's your boss's boss. That's like the executive at a company. And you're just like talking shit to him.
Yeah, that's like you working underneath Elon Musk and you insulting him every day about being Indian or something like that. Like, that shit ain't gonna fly. Or making fun of the guy who owns Amazon,
Jeff Bezos.
Like that ain't gonna happen at all. But so this falls on Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner, because he didn't correct anything, and literally for Phil to come back, Jerry Reinsdorf had to fly, I believe it was Montana, to talk to Phil Jackson, and he signed a 1-year deal, $5 million. $5 million, which is crazy, because if you're the owner of the Chicago Bulls and the GM comes out and says you're only going to play here for one more year, you're the owner. I mean, the GM says that. You're the owner. You could have signed Phil Jackson to several more seasons if he felt like he could have kept winning, but he gave too much power to the GM with so much he was overgoing the owner, overstepping his boundaries by being completely disrespectful. So players are being disrespectful back, which is obviously shown throughout the first two episodes of the doc.
Yeah. It just figures out that it makes excellent television, but in terms of working relationships, it really sucks.
And then next, we can talk about some of the stuff that MJ was saying when he first got to the team and how bad the Bulls were when he first got there. Yeah. Like
you always hear stories about teams, but they're never really airing it all out there, right? Yeah. And it's like you got to wait till they retire in order to find out. Exactly.
That's why this doc is so great, because it's 20, 25 years after retirement, 20 years after the 98 season, not that 90s run. Yeah. So you can get like a lot of truth in it, because – like because we talk about it too sometimes, like how when you're interviewing players or like America's Game of Super Bowl in the football, when they like talk about the season, like right after it happened, there's no insight. You don't give the great insight. You don't get what you really felt in the moment because you're still trying to play. You're still trying to get that contract.
And it's comparable because those documentaries are produced by the NFL.
Yeah.
And they got to keep things very close knit.
Yeah.
To the to the chest, because you think about that that Saints Gate, what is it called?
Bounty Gate. Yeah.
You know, they're not going to really express that.
Yeah, they didn't talk about that at all.
Publicly.
Yeah.
You know, so there is time heals all, and that is some truth.
Yeah.
But I will bring up something that was brought up about the documentary not being so solid, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's two things before we continue talking about what we're talking about.
All right.
Number one is a personal opinion, not mine.
Okay.
But my father does not like the structure of the documentary.
Okay.
Because the main focus is the 97-98 season, right? But then it always backtracks to the 80s, the 70s, the 90s, going back to people's personal biographies and other seasons, dramas that's going on. My father has an issue with that back and forth stuff, right?
Okay.
There is moments where I feel sometimes I'll be a little confused, like, wait, is this the present day? Is this back then? Mm-hmm. You know, was Rodman on the team yet? Or was he still with Detroit?
Yeah.
So there's some moments where I got a little, confused as well. Corday, what do you think about it? Do you like the style where it goes back and forth, or would you like it if it was all in chronological order?
Well, the back and forth I got because The Last Dance covered the 98 season. I was – because it gave backstory of to where – how did we get here? Because, mm-hmm. If you just talk about the 98 season, the drama that Winfield, you gotta give a story, what built up to it. They gave Jordan's backstory. Pippen's backstory, Rodman's backstory, Horace Grant, how he felt in the earlier years, and then how he got to the 98 season. Before I even started watching this, I was like, how are you going to make a 10-part series just on one season?
Yeah.
But then I was like, why don't you just do a doc about Jordan? And I felt like this is kind of what they're giving you all in one. So it's a combination of everything that's focused around Jordan and also the Bulls during his whole playing time and everything he went with. So that's why it's so long, and it's the back and forth to where – so it's not really The Last Dance. It's how we got to the last dance, which I like because, Jordan is the man. Jordan's the GOAT, and you had to make a series this detailed about his entire career and his entire run with the Bulls. Probably won't talk about his third retirement, and when he talked about when he came to the Wizards, this is all focused on The Last Dance, his last time in the Bulls uniform. So I actually like it. I was watching with my cousin, and he kept getting confused too. But I think he was watching 7 and 8, and he was still on 4. So that's why he was confused. Gotcha. It's funny because I was keeping up, but he kept confusing me, and I had to keep this is not. I'm like, I'm watching it. It's like, oh, okay. But he kept getting confused. So I see how it is like that. But I just like the backstory. Tell me how we got to this point. You know, I love, I'm learning everything about him. So, yeah.
Yeah, there was a point, the specific point where I was a little confused was when they were going back to the finals that they had against the Supersonics.
Yeah.
And then they were going back to the series that they had with the Nets.
Yeah.
And also the series that they had with the Pacers.
Yeah.
And that's where I was like, oh, shit. All right. Where are we? Are we at the finals? Are we not? That was a portion of it. But it's a stylistic approach.
Yeah.
I enjoyed. I mean, I love eating, consuming all all of that.
Yeah.
There was one episode where they were talking about how much of a sellable product he was.
Yeah.
How they, very specific advertising companies tried to approach Jordan as if he was a solo individual, as if he was the way that they marketed tennis players.
Yeah.
Right. And I feel like that was the beginning of someone being so marketable in that nature. Absolutely. Without Jordan, there wouldn't be the LeBron. There wouldn't be the Kobe's, all those where the sole product is the object is like you trying to be, hey, I want to be like Mike.
Yeah.
Or like having Spike Lee.
Yeah. It definitely gave power to the players in the NBA. You made this person an icon and very marketable. So, they always talk about how basketball is a very marketable sport because you see their faces while you can in football. And I do realize what you said, how you said you can confuse. And I think 7 and 8 were probably, as you were confused, probably those are probably the two most episodes where the back and forth kind of gets like, you don't know,
muffled
a little bit, because it's probably, you know, here and there. I feel like those are the specific episodes when I think back that are probably like that specifically. I'm like, yeah, I can see that. But everything else, I feel like it's like well established. Because I guess before like one through six, whatever, it's backstory of players on the team. While this time it's kind of retirement, like, or it's like baseball and things like that. So yeah, I can definitely understand that.
Yeah. But I think that it would be interesting TV if they did just a documentary strictly on MJ's notoriety and the way that the game of advertising was changed. Because even when they go to – I'm skipping ahead a little bit.
Yeah.
The 92 Dream Team.
Yeah.
In the 92 Dream Team, that was like the first year that NBA players were allowed to play in international play, right? In the Olympics.
Yeah, Olympics, yeah.
And there was giant banners of – MJ all throughout the world, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, who could really do that? You know, if you would go anywhere around the world during the 90s, everyone would know MJ.
Yeah.
Right? And it was the reason that Nike got hot.
Yeah.
Right? Nike was putting out these images of Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
And it coincided with the Jordan brand.
Yeah.
And the Nike brand.
Yeah.
So without that power dynamic that they had, who would have known if Jordan or Nike would have been so hot, right?
Well, I think it goes
that partnership.
I think it goes back even before that, because I remember when he first got the shoe deal, right? The first Dunks, like there was all these different people. I think everybody wore Converse and like other stuff, and then Reebok was trying to come one, but then he partnered with Nike, and he was initially gonna go with Reebok, but then Nike came out with the Dunk ones, the Jordan ones. And they was like, they're actually, it makes sense why the sole is so like thin and stuff, because they had just came out with the format for a running shoe. And if you were walking Jordan 1s, your feet hurt tremendously after. I remember I actually developed plantar fasciae because I was wearing my Jordan 1s too often and walking around all of Santa Barbara while I was at school. So that marketability he sold the shoe specifically. And because I remember initially they said in 4 years they wanted to sell, if they sold 3 million shoes, it would have been a success. Within the first year, they sold 180 million, I believe. So, but then how you said the ratcheting up of the Spike Lee, I want to be like Mike, definitely helped it a lot more. And also the fun thing is, you mentioned the Dream Team, but we're going to cover this like later on. Just a simple fact of Reebok had made specific Dream Team like warm-up suits.
Oh, yeah.
And Jordan didn't want to, being competitive, didn't want to show the Reebok sign on his uniform. He's like, I ain't going to be wearing that, stuff like that. I'm going to cover it up. And I was like, how's he going to cover it up? And he used the American flag to cover up the Reebok sign, which is like there's nothing you could do about this. There's no rebuttal you could do. Like, well, he was covered up our sign, but he was wearing an American flag. No, but he should have shown. And like, so it would have showed how petty he was when literally he just dominated and won this.
Yeah, and then it comes to the fact that MJ did whatever the fuck he wanted, right?
Yeah.
He was that one dude where I think he was so big that it's like, what are you going to say to him, right?
Yeah.
I think that's also why it got to his head in terms that he could talk to the manager like that.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of his personality.
Yeah.
Where they're trying to interview Scottie Pippen after a game, and he's honking the horn of the bus to stop, you know, the newscasters from doing the interview.
Oh.
And it's like, what player would be able to...
Tea time. Oh, that was hilarious. Yeah.
It's like, which player would be able to pull that off nowadays, right? They'd probably be fined. Mm-hmm. They'll probably be suspended for messing up whatever contracts that these, you know, TV newscasters have with, you know, the NBA, the league, the teams, right?
Oh, you mean I'm just here so I don't get fined? You saying things like that? The only other story I've heard of something like that, like when Lawrence Taylor, like, got practiced to end early because his tee time was at a certain point, and Bill Parcells cut off practice. That's the only other player who was like that dynamic where they can cut off practice because the main player or the best player on the team was going to play golf. That's the only other time.
Yeah.
But so it was ridiculous and it was hilarious, like how everything just kind of stopped. He was like, oh, what time is it? Uh-oh. Tea time. And this everything starts shutting down. And no, he's like, oh, I gotta do it. And like, no, we gotta go. And they following him. He's like, hey, honking. Like that was hilarious and hella funny to me. It was like, hey man, what the hell are we doing? Now we gotta go shoot some golf. And then literally he's at the golf course. Hilarious. That was super funny to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then going full circle, how they're talking about how marketable he is, right?
Yeah.
That people made money off of slighting him, right? It was that guy that, like, you make money off of controversies from him.
Uh-huh.
Like that news reporter that worked for Chicago Tribune.
Oh, yeah.
He made that documentary or that
book, The Jordan Rules.
The Jordan Rules. Yeah. The one talking about how not everyone's a fan of Jordan in the locker room. How he's an asshole. Someone even said that he would take food off of one of his teammates' plates whenever he'd have a bad game, which is kind of funny, but at the same time, it's kind of fucked up.
Jordan Rules by Sam Smith. Also, another reason why he took play, because, you know, he wasn't playing good, and Horace Grant was the dude who he took plate off of. It was saying specifically on the flights back from games where Horace didn't play well, he would tell the flight attendant, Horace ain't getting no food because he didn't play well. He don't deserve to eat, which is fucking hilarious to me. Like, hey man, what you need to eat for? You didn't do good. It was like, so that shows the level of control he had. But also I heard Horace Grant tried to fight MJ, and he wanted to fight MJ because he said that to him, and he actually had to be restrained. And because Shannon Sharp broke this on Undisputed, he said, because you know, you got to think about it. This doc is kind of ran by Jordan as well, too. This is his personal doc, and he's like control of editing.
Yeah.
Horace Grant said in a doc, but it wasn't shown, that he's like, MJ didn't want no part of me then, and he don't want no part of me now, which is hilarious to think, you know, the most dominant player doesn't want to fight and stuff. But interesting. But also, Horace Grant played like power forward, so of course not. Like, he's probably bigger than him, so just great. Overall, just great.
And then it comes to the idea of, was Jordan, did he have issues with teammates? Did all his teammates like him or not? Mm-hmm. They all said it. They all said it in their own little way. Like, yo, he's cool. But I mean, he was like a tyrant. But at the same time, can you pull that off if you're not a good player?
Yeah.
Can you pull that off if you're not the best player?
Absolutely not.
You probably get kicked off of teams for trying to, you know. Phil Jackson would say that Jordan would have to chill off from some of the players because he was too aggressive with them, right?
Yeah.
He'll try to get them to fight him and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But only certain specific people can pull that asshole sort of controlling mentality on the team, right?
Yeah.
And it has to be the best player in the entire league in order to pull that off.
And they got to be the leader of the team, too. Yeah. Like, you can't be an asshole or a dick. Well, okay, let's say this. You can't be an asshole and you can't be a dick and be a below-average player, as you mentioned. But you can do that and be a very good player, though. But it also shows, because he's the best player on the team, he can get away with a lot more. And he says in the doc, he says, Was I hard on teammates? Yeah. Was I tough on teammates? Yeah. Was I an asshole? Yeah. But I was just being hard on them. So when it came time to, like, when the tough, you know, because all the stuff he went through to get to that point. So he's being hard on you because he knows how hard it is to get to this championship, how to win. So that's why he was so hard on people, which, you know, we probably talk about this in a bit before we, after we take this break that's coming up. Is it good to be an asshole? Like, or have you ever played with a person who's an asshole? And is that a good thing or a bad thing? Like, or were their traits good being an asshole to help win, or was it just a negative affecting the team negatively?
Yeah. So, because it could be overwhelming the way that, if that sort of attitude is towards you all the time, right? Yeah. So we're going to take this quick break. Talk to y'all soon.
Peace. And so we're back, and in being positive and negative, being an asshole player, as touch on explaining to Edgar. Example of this is Draymond Green.
Yes.
He's an all-star. He's not the best player on the team, and some things he could do, it could be detrimental, like getting technicals. But then also he's like the heart and beat of the Warriors, while like Curry, Clay, they're not like the dominant egos on the team. But then it can backfire by you calling one of your best friends, like KD, a bitch, and everybody knows it. Like that could be negative about it to it. But if that was, let's say, KD and he had that same mentality and he called Draymond a bitch, it might be seen a lot differently and taken a lot differently from the media as well.
Yeah. But there's the thing, you know, there's always assholes on the team, right? Yeah. And there has to be someone on the polar opposite.
Yeah.
That someone's more like that positive, mm-hmm. high energy dude, mm-hmm. more mellow, isn't going to give you a lot of shit for it, right? Mm-hmm. And they said that on that team, Scottie Pippen was that guy.
Exactly.
He was the guy that would, you know, everybody loved. Mm-hmm. He was beloved by everyone, mm-hmm. as opposed to Jordan wasn't always beloved by everyone.
Exactly.
Like with the Warriors, you can go to multiple people. You can go to mm-hmm. Andre Iguodala. Mm-hmm. You can go to Steph Curry. Yeah. And they're going to be the dudes that are going to bring you up, right? Mm-hmm. They're not just going to tear you down.
Yeah.
So there always has to be some sort of balance. If their balance isn't there, then you're kind of fucked. That's why people were saying – that's why some of the teammates were saying that at the beginning of the season of the 97-98 season when Scottie Pippen wasn't playing, that they were all very frustrated.
Exactly.
Because, number one, Jordan's losing, right?
Yeah.
So he's already hyper-competitive mm-hmm. when they're winning. Imagine when he's losing, he's going to be more of an asshole.
Exactly.
And if you don't got that guy to cheer you up or bring you up, then it's just going to be beaten down down on your teammates. They're going to be tired of it, right?
That person to even things out. Yeah. Like you got good cop, bad cop. And then like if you're just getting bad cop all day, then now they're going to be smooth. Everything going to be a bumpy road until Scotty got back. And when Scotty got back, he got that. He kind of smooth things out and help the morale of the team to help get things back.
So – that's one – I've always known that Jordan was an asshole.
Yeah.
But I didn't know to what extent of an asshole he was, right?
Yeah.
Because you look at the superstars of the past few decades. Mm-hmm. You look at LeBron James, right? Is he much of an asshole? Not that I know of. Yeah. Someone that's a little more middle ground is Kobe.
Yeah.
Kobe's kind of an asshole, but he's also a guy that people love or hate. Right? Depending on which teammate you are. Yeah. So he's a little more in line of the MJ, mm-hmm. but I still feel that a lot of teammates are more favorable of Kobe, but not Shaq, when they're playing.
Yeah, exactly. I think Kobe's more definitely an asshole and takes a lot after Mike, but I think as Kobe, post-retirement Kobe, smoothed out and kind of like start building those relationships with like with younger players and things like that. But I think definitely if you were a teammate of his, because, you know, you could think about the two Laker runs with the like the Shannon Browns of the world, the Paul Gasols and things like that, those young players. He's probably much more of an asshole than when he was with Shaq. But you also had like the Rick Fox, the Robert Ories of the world. I can't think of his name, the short point guard who got into it, who like was in the fight and shit like that. But Derek Fisher. That's what I was looking for. Derek Fisher of the Worlds. And those like different mentality. And also older players as well. So those are two different aspects of it. Also, funniest part, or you can show how much of Jordan's competitiveness, anger, and then like tenacity that he always had in practice when he got into the fight with Steve Kerr. Who Steve Kerr said he's very competitive as well, but even though it doesn't get him as far, when he kept fouling Steve Kerr, and then he gave like a hard foul to Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr had enough of it, went up and punched Jordan in the chest. And then Jordan came back and punched Steve Kerr in the eye. And then Phil Jackson threw him out of the practice. See, I always heard that Michael Jordan had punched Steve Kerr in the eye, but I didn't know it had built up and then Steve Kerr hit him first. Now, that was the one context I did know. So I can understand.
But Jordan was the one that socked him in the eye.
No, I know. But I'm saying, but it seemed like more it was like Steve Kerr wasn't going hard enough. And then it got so frustrated he punched him in the eye. It wasn't, instead of seeming like I hit you first and then I hit you back kind of thing. Like it was building to this point. But like that's what happened. I always just was under the, he was so competitive and Steve Kerr wasn't doing enough. They fucking punched him in the eye.
Yeah, it wasn't like that. It was just.
Yeah. It was like a back and forth, like in a hard practice, which I was definitely adds more clarity to it and definitely like, okay, I get it more now. I can never see LeBron punching nobody in the eye.
Yeah.
Even after when JR fuck up, but I can never see that happen to LeBron. I never see LeBron doing that shit, which is pretty interesting to me.
That meme where LeBron is pointing towards the opposite court.
Yeah.
And then he's pissed off with his hands to the side, right? I saw a tweet. I'm gonna get a little off topic. I saw a tweet that says, "Oh, first images of Space Jam 2 revealed," mm-hmm. and it was an image of LeBron pointing, and instead of it being J.R. Smith, it's Bugs Bunny. Yeah. So it's LeBron yelling at Bugs Bunny. I thought that was hilarious.
I thought it was fucking funny too, because, like, you know, he's very silly. He's very you know, he's a cartoon character, so it definitely made it even more funny because you could see like a tune fucking up,
yeah,
like a Looney Tune, especially like that, doing some loony and fucking up, and then it's just like the perfect context for to keep the meme funny and keep it going. I love that. I saw that. I was dying. Very funny indeed.
Yeah. Now also going to it, it was interesting that that Jordan, in order for him to get back into shape after joining the team for like the last 20 games or whatever, mm-hmm. was the fact that during the filming of Space Jam, in order for them to accommodate Jordan's wishes, was that they built a full-on workout, like training camp style situation there. Like mm-hmm. it was an indoor basketball court. Plus a bunch of weights. Mm. So they were talking about his work ethic, about how he'd film. You know, I work in film and television. You work 12 hours a day, and then after that, you don't want to do shit. But instead, after that, you play 2 to 3 hours of basketball against some of the best in the world, and a lot of them would just flock there, and they'll just start competing at, you know, Warner Brothers Studios. So that was some cool little behind-the-scenes footage that I was really interested in seeing. Yeah. You know, I didn't think they were going to touch up on the entire you know, Looney Tunes, Warner Brothers thing.
Yeah.
But it was great to see that, you know, a Disney entity like ESPN making a documentary, being able to show that kind of stuff, right?
Absolutely.
So it got me even more excited to rewatch Space Jam, but also looking forward to whenever the hell Space Jam 2 comes out.
We all going to watch it, but we know it's not going to be as good as the first one. But then it made so much sense. Like, when I was shocked too, like how great and how lavish that gym was. That was when I was like, how do you stay in great shape while shooting the movie? Maybe Shaq should have asked that for that same thing when he was making out like Steel and Kazam. Because if you look at Shaq from Orlando to the Lakers, he gained a lot of weight, but also filmed a lot of movies during that time because he wanted to become a superstar. But shows your dedication, your work ethic. Going from there, another huge, flamboyant, hell of a person and is Dennis Rodman. Dennis Rodman was one of my favorite players growing up because I love the colors of the hair, the different colors that he was influenced by, and just how the tenacity of him and the rebounding. So I remember my dad would always like, well, if you can't do nothing, you can play defense, you can rebound. And that was something that I got early on into my basketball game, which was dope. And I just love Dennis Rodman was always dope and tenacious. And one of the funniest things when he went from Detroit and signed with them, and it was going hard, and Dennis was just like, yo, I need a break. I need a 48-hour break. And Mike Field was in the room, and then Mike was like, yo, if you give him a break, he ain't never coming back.
Yeah.
He was – and he didn't. Like, he had – before, I think it ended up being like a 72-hour or some crazy amount of time away. He just had to go to Vegas to unwind. I thought that was fucking hilarious. What did you think about that?
Yo, I saw that as a little teaser trailer leading up to the episodes.
Yeah.
And, man, it was amazing that they said that Michael had to go fetch him out.
Yeah.
And that Carmen Electra, you know, Dennis Rodman's wife at the moment.
Yeah.
She, like, ran out, like, half naked or something. So that was a good story, but also it was crazy. The craziest fact was that they said that they had to do conditioning
mm-hmm.
in order to get Rodman back in shape.
Yeah.
And they said that he was already looking like he was in shape.
Yeah.
And it's like, damn, you do so much detrimental damage to your body.
Yeah.
You know, who knows what drugs he was doing? Who knows how much alcohol he consumed?
Yeah.
But just to see him wilding out and then him still being in mm-hmm. game mode.
Yeah.
Kazoo. Me, after a night of drinking, I am not the same the next day. I am heavy-footed. Yeah. I am huffing and puffing.
Yeah. To be specific, what Edgar's talking about, which is mind-blowing to me as well, after they pulled him out, they go to practice the next day. They thinking he's hungover and shit, so there's this thing called the Indian drill, where the person, they're all, like, jogging, and they jog into the front, or they keep, they're jogging, and they have to keep a certain pace. And the person in the back runs to the front and starts to set the new pace. So Jordan's like, this dude's hungover. He's been partying. We got to keep the pace low. We got to keep the pace low, right? So they're all going slow. They're all going slow. And then when it's Robin's turn to go from the back to the front to become the leader, they said it took them 4.5 laps before they could finally catch back up to Robin. That show was like how you said, how great of a shape he was in, how his mindset was, you know, like, I'm here, I'm ready to play, I'm here, but I just need this break during this time period. But once I'm back and once I'm here, time to play basketball, I'm here. And just, like, that's ridiculous. You slowed it down for him, and then as soon as it's his turn to go to the front, they're supposed to keep it slow, he outracing everybody. I would have been so mad at the end of that damn practice. Like, because we've been here. We ain't took breaks. You have. Like, you
was like, we got to do extra conditioning.
Yeah, exactly. So that part was hilarious to me. And also, speaking because of Dennis Rodman, you know, the team we played for previous, or the original way that, you know, they ran into Mike, as when he played for the Detroit Pistons. And how they talk about how Mike struggled against the Pistons and how physical it was. And the Jordan rules, quote unquote, which led to a future book, and why he struggled against them, because they were very physical. There was no technical fouls. It's probably rarely ever called back then in the day. You go to the hoop and get fouled super, super hard. Nothing happened. Or you could, like, shoot your free throws or something like that. And it showed, like, that he couldn't take the pounding of that, and he kept losing to him 2 years in a row. And then eventually he decided to lift weights, and we all know the story that he put on 10 pounds of muscle. Always was told that it was 25 pounds of muscle in all season, but it was 10. But he couldn't put on 25 because he trained and worked out so much, but he leaned up and he finally could take the pound, and that's how he eventually got over the Detroit Pistons.
Was just everybody getting buffed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's always interesting because it's a touchy subject between those sort of, like, very lean athletic sports and weights, because it messes with your game, right? It messes with your mechanics and stuff like that. But, yeah, you know, it's crazy because then it goes full circle to the Isaiah Thomas thing.
Yeah.
Where they were saying that when the Bulls finally beat them, that they just walked off and didn't even shake hands with the Bulls. And that got to Jordan, right?
Yeah.
And then people were saying that, because he had so much clout back in the day, because he was the face of the NBA, that when it came to the Dream Team, Isaiah Thomas didn't get invited to the Olympics because of his relationship with MJ.
Yeah.
And then the doctor, like, saying, hold on, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You think Michael's an asshole? Well, it's known throughout the NBA that Isaiah Thomas is an asshole.
So he probably even a bigger one at that. Yeah. Which is hilarious, too, because he was a bigger asshole than MJ was and walked off the court. And to Isaiah Thomas's credit, he said, well, even the Celtics, after they got beat, they shook hands. And Isaiah said, no, I had to go catch Kevin McHale when he was at half court because Larry Bird was already headed back to the showers, and he shook my hand then. But then they all walked off. So he thought that's how it was at the time. And Mike seeing it... He, even to this day, he was like, I don't want to see this shit, because I already know he about to change it. And that's, or whatever he say now, and how he felt in the moment. So that just shows how much of a rift still was in that point. And then going to the Dream Team, one of the funniest the funniest things, the videos that you use now, he was like, I had the criteria and the makeup to be there. But for whatever reason, I wasn't selected. I've seen so many funny, like, captions on videos used for that afterwards.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious.
So it's like when you're a side dude, you're not the real boyfriend.
Yeah. And it was like when the one I used shared today was when you meet the criteria before, you outgo the criteria or whatever she wants is in a man. Like, you way exceed them. But she still ends up dating a drug dealer anyway, which is, like, hella funny. And because the funny thing about it, they said they chose John Stockton over Isaiah Thomas. And even MJ said, the best two point guards to me ever is Magic Johnson and then Isaiah Thomas. But then I heard that
Magic Johnson played on the squad too.
Yeah, he played on the squad, but then Magic didn't like Isaiah Thomas either, and they were great friends at the time. But then they had went through a whole beef for a long period of time. Like before games, they used to kiss each other on the cheek. But then they were going through at the time. Larry Bird, I don't think liked him either. And then not only that, his head coach was the coach of the Dream Team. So you got to think about it. They had to be together for like 6 weeks or something like that, 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
So they didn't want Isaiah there because tons of people didn't like him. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense why he wasn't on the team and it wasn't just Michael who kept him off the team.
Yeah, so it did also show, go to the point where MJ is an asshole, but also he's not hated by everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it comes to his teammates, Charles Barkley, all of them, they just you know, embrace him. They love playing with him.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely did, and it showed the greatness of Michael. Even then, like I remember, as you mentioned, Charles Barkley, like Charles Barkley won the MVP and then played Michael Jordan in the finals, and he took that personally that Charles Barkley won the MVP over him and like took it out on him in the finals. And literally, there's like Charles Barkley, so he's like, I had a good game, I was having some great games. It was like scoring, but it just wasn't enough to beat Michael Jordan. And it shows him like losing by like 9 or something, and ended up just losing the finals. He's like, I got no problem when it comes to losing, especially if it's to Michael Jordan. And that shows the greatness of Michael Jordan, that he kept so many Hall of Famers from winning a championship ring, like the Charles Oakley and the Patrick Ewings, the Charles Barkleys, the Reggie Millers, the Gary Paytons with the Seattle Sonics. And he kept all these great players from winning a championship. The only time they won is the 2 years he took off because of retirement. And there's a lot of speculation about it, like that we always hear. Was it because he had a gambling issue and the David Stern told him he had to retire?
Oh, man.
Or was it the fact that, you know, his father passed and he said that he was just super exhausted by that time because all the media coverage and what he had to do on a daily basis?
Yeah, and then that also goes full circle to, like, people you play golf with. Like,
yeah.
That guy who ran that San Diego
Ponzi scheme,
sports, arena president, how then he released that book trying to profit off MJ's,
gambling and stuff like that.
MJ's, gambling problems in mines or whatever.
Yeah.
So it just shows how profitable this man was that Absolutely. Even when people are dogging him, that they're making money off of him.
Exactly,
right?
Man. Exactly.
And but, dude, when I'm pretty sure that this sort of, like, sensationalized sort of, like, shitty journalism existed back then, but it exists even more now.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Because people can just write opinion pieces, mm-hmm. and it can come from like peer-to-peer shared sort of like websites and blogs.
Exactly.
And then they're not reviewed mm-hmm. by other people.
Mm-hmm.
So then when they come out, people could share it on Facebook and look at it as facts.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So that's the dangerous part of the internet age.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, man, dude, if my pops passed away during season or I wouldn't even know how to react either. So
exactly.
Was it enough that he's grieving?
Yeah.
And he's trying to figure out what his next move is.
Yeah.
Isn't that enough for like wanting to take a year off?
Exactly. And then not only that, his dad always wanted to play baseball. Like that was his dad's favorite sport. And then another thing, some of the terrible reporting, as you mentioned, that they was connecting, possibly maybe his death was connected to Jordan's gambling debts.
Yeah.
Which is way out of bounds, man. That's like ridiculous, crazy, like forcing him out. I remember earlier in the doc, they say the way y'all covering him, y'all gonna eventually force this man out.
Yeah.
And that's probably what happened. And that's terrible. Like, you grieving and you saying my gambling debt is the reason why he got killed, when it really was he didn't want to drive straight home. He got tired, so he pulled over on a road.
His dad passed away or was killed. Yeah.
And two guys came up, saw him sleeping, shot him in the chest, dragged his body, and then found his body like in a lake or something, which is
3 weeks later.
Yeah, which was crazy.
But the thing that I was unclear about during the documentary was, were they aware that that was his dad's car? Or was it just some random sort of just robbery?
seemed like a random robbery. Because, like, you got to think he was driving up from North Carolina, and country part of North Carolina, which I hear is very country at the time. At the time, it still is to this day. So I don't think that they knew it was his dad's car, especially because it wasn't like it was Jordan's dad or somebody. I didn't see like the last place it said it. And plus, it was probably like a nice, it was a nice Lexus. It was in red. So they probably took that in, but then also did a racist killing at the same time because it was two white men. So
it was two white men?
It was two white men, yeah. So, yeah, it was a racial killing, not a just like a random robbery, you know. Because they said the way it went, it was like they probably came up and shot him, like, immediately in the chest and then went from there and, like, stole the car, took the body, threw it out. So, yeah. So that adds even – makes it even worse that they was thinking, oh, it was probably a gambling debt that Jordan had to repay, and that's why he was end up getting killed, which is so crazy and like so messed up at the same time.
Actually, it says they were Larry Martin Dimitri and Daniel Andre Green were the suspects. One was 17 and one was 18. It looks like one is black and one is white, Corday.
Really?
So I don't know if it was necessarily a racial killing there. But it is a fucked up thing, man, especially because, you know, we always, nowadays, people critique Kevin Durant for being someone who is thin-skinned and someone who's affected a lot by the media, right? I was thinking about that, like, you know, KD and MJ have similarities, which is they pay attention a lot to the television.
Absolutely.
And that's one thing that I noticed during the documentary is that he's constantly watching television, as I'm sure other teams and other players do the same thing, right? But his spotlight is mostly just on him. So we see the way that he reacts to things. And even nowadays when they're going to his interviews during his current days, right, as a 57, 56-year-old man, he's admitting to a lot of these things.
Yeah.
So it shows that he was sensitive. A lot of shit got to him, even though he didn't really – people didn't really know about it publicly. But he's very honest about it nowadays. So it's like, imagine if MJ was playing nowadays, right? Would he be similar to Kevin Durant in terms of how he handles the media, in terms of – him creating fake Twitter accounts to then respond to fans talking shit, right? Would he have taken that same approach, you think?
I don't think so. I don't think he would create a fake account. He probably wouldn't be going back and forth. Because remember, there's one point where he's like very isolated in the doc. While on the road and things like that. So shows like what he does throughout the day, watch TV and things like that. He probably would he probably would have told like more people off, like in the media, or like say you wrong, or like he probably would have been more honest when it came to certain players like acting a certain way, like, or like, you know, he's motivated by people saying he's not that good, or if you beat him, or like, or you did something wrong to him, like, he's very motivated to embarrass you, like, after that, you know? I feel like he probably would have talked up on that a lot more, you know? Like, in press conference and things like that, instead of having to come out later in a doc, what you see now.
Yeah. That's an interesting take. So, you see a difference between KD and him.
Yeah.
What's the difference? The difference is that he'll just be more snappy at the media and he wouldn't really react more to fans nowadays because it's so interactive now that you can't even go take a shit without people filming, oh my God, MJ's in the bathroom taking a shit. Oh, let me get, you know what I mean?
I think, but the one thing about that, MJ was always conscious about his image.
Yeah, okay.
So I think that's the one thing. He would always want to have his image look a certain way and understand a certain way, like how LeBron is not like very much like how his image is a very certain kind of type of way, you know. He'd be like a lot more he was always worried about that. He was worried about it when the doc happened, was dropping. He's like, I don't want people to train. So I think that from that standpoint, he would have a lot more control and always be able to keep a narrative a certain way. But then he probably would challenge people, like if they wrote something, you know, like, or this person is passing you, and like, or like for an example, when they said Steph Curry was like the best player in the league, and then MJ and then LeBron ended up winning or whatever, and it was like acting somewhere in the court. But I think MJ would embarrassed any time somebody would have wrote that about him. Like, is this person the next? Let's say he's playing, right? And then they say, is KD now the best player in the league? MJ would probably guard him all game, make him have a terrible game while he scores like 45, yeah. You know? And then after the game, we'll probably ask, like, so Bill, like, let's say Bill Cartwright, like, so Bill, you really think KD's the best player in the league now? Did you just see how bad I did him? And probably been like a lot more forthright when it comes to stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think that's how he would go about it.
Yeah. So we're going to go ahead and
probably
wrap up.
Probably subtweet a lot more, too.
Subtweet people. All right, so we're going to wrap up this episode. Corday, any final thoughts?
Oh, man, I just love the doc, man. And just love, and it also, this doc shows me that there's no way that LeBron's the GOAT over MJ. And it just shows, like, the mindset of him and then how. One thing I liked about the doc was saying, like, how MJ brought it, that championship great player mindset every single day. And that's what made him so great, because it was every single day he was like that, and everything, it was always on. Whereas just how some players do he play without, how you need it, they didn't bring it every day. And that's what separated him from everybody else.
It's work ethic.
Work ethic. Yeah. And then mindset, too. Mindset. Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to leave y'all with something to think about. We're not going to answer it today. We're going to answer it on the next episode. So it's a documentary, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the guy who is named the father of documentaries, his name is Ken Burns. He even has a masterclass out there, because you know how masterclass is like the hot thing where people take classes from professionals, right?
Mm.
So he's saying that he would not have liked to make the MJ doc. And you think, why not? And his argument is that it isn't a good documentary because it can't be objective about the situation, about the 97-98 Bulls, because Michael Jordan has the last say in what goes in and what doesn't go in.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much the approval
mm-hmm.
of the final product.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that someone cannot have the approval of the final project in which you are documenting
mm-hmm.
and be objective at the same time to be able to tell the complete truth, right?
Mm-hmm.
You won't be able to form your opinions, you know, without that sort of oversight.
Yeah.
So we're talking about whether it's a good documentary or a bad documentary, and whether it's good for TV or bad for TV. So we're just going to leave y'all with that question. Y'all can think about it. Let us know your opinions on it. And then me and Corday are going to discuss it further in the final episode, covering the last two episodes of The Last Dance. So is this good journalistic documentary? Is this good for TV, et cetera, et cetera? So, yeah, on that note, I'm Edgar Vega.
I'm Corday Snell.
Thank you for listening, and we'll catch y'all next time.
Out.